Hey Eddie, I currently live in Jago, and I am working for an advertising agency on the island of Guam. As far as my reason for returning to Guam, there were many and varied, but I would say the underlying reason was a return to a place that was significant in that many traumatic episodes occurred to myself and my comrade in arms. As far as how long I'll stay, I don't know. I've been living here about 10 years now, and I travel back and forth. But this is my home. I was the platoon leader of the 2nd Platoon of F Company, 9th Marines. I joined the Marine Corps on June 1st, 1942. When I landed in Guam on July the 21st, 1944. I was 23 years old.
How did Guam look from the beaches to you?
Well, there wasn't much to see. It was just all smoke and fire because the Navy was giving it a good working over. My view of Guam, of course, was from a LCVP. That's commonly called a Higgins boat in those days. We were landing on the beach on the right flank, which would have been called Blue Beach. The 9th Marines landed in a column of battalions, and the 3rd Battalion was the first ashore, followed by the 2nd Battalion, and then followed by the 1st Battalion. So there, on Blue Beach, there were probably at least 1,000 Marines who had landed prior to when our unit landed.
What was your objective for your troops plan after hitting the beaches?
Well, the objective of the company, I was in F Company, was to go to that ridge right to our fort around there. That's the first ridge immediately inland from the beach. However, our landing pattern had been disrupted due to the fact that there was intense fire right in this particular area where we're sitting. It was coming from this ridge behind us. There was a company of Marines in there, and they were meeting very stiff resistance. Yeah, right along here. Yeah, that's the SN Point Ridge. And so this immediate area right here was also coming under fire, so they slid our unit down to the left. As I recall, I landed right by the banks of this first little river up there. And then went across here. This was a rice paddy at the time. Went across there and went up to the base of that ridge so that I was right behind K Company. Well, after our unit reached the base of the ridge immediately to our front, we were taken under fire from our left from large weapons that were up somewhere, I guess, right now where Flag Circle is. We were also taken under fire by weapons to our right rear, which was the Assan Ridge. And we were in a position where, of course, we couldn't fire back because we didn't know where the other units were who were attacking those positions. So it was just a matter of sitting there and just waiting. And eventually, I think it was about noontime.
Same
day, everything was organized enough that we could continue our advance, which was to cross the little bridge that we visited and go up that path and go up on top of the ridge. Then the 9th Marine Regiment actually attacked to the west down the beach. My particular company was up in the hills overlooking the beach area. The first day, the 9th Marines made very rapid advances because we didn't have as severe terrain as the other units, and we actually had to be pulled back into the division perimeter that evening because we had overextended our lines on the right flank much further than, of course, had happened over at Antelope, where they were in, under extremely heavy concentrated fire and real steep cliffs to climb. The next morning, we continued our attack, and we were down into Petey. Causeway leading to Cameron's Island. As I recall, it was prior to noon. And it was a matter of there just flushing out scattered resistance and not much happening. I believe it was on the third day, which would be D plus 2, the 2nd Battalion 9th Marines was detached from the 9th Marines and sent over to an area by Bunchu Ridge and put in Division Reserve. We spent the night there the next morning, which would be D plus 4. We replaced A Company, 3rd Marines, and the 2nd Battalion, 9th Marines actually became a functional unit of the 3rd Marine Regiment. We attacked up to the river, the road that runs from Adelup up to Mount Tenhall. We occupied that road by 1 o'clock in the afternoon. We continued the attack about 3 or 3:30 in the afternoon and attacked all the way across Fonte Ridge. F Company was in a unique position there. The terrain impeding us was not as heavy as that facing the other units. Company commander of F Company at that particular point in time was Captain Lewis Wilson. The company on our right, which was E Company, had very, very difficult terrain in front of it, and consequently they weren't able to get a running start, as it were, when the bombardment ceased on top of Fonte Ridge, whereas F Company had a clear shot. So we were up in and over the Japanese position before they even knew we had started our attack. As far as the details of the battle on Fonte Ridge, I can only, recount what happened within my immediate area. This is, all I really saw and all I paid particular attention to. But the Japanese did react very violently to our attack into their position and immediately started counterattacking. The first counterattack to hit my particular platoon was from the right flank, and that occurred within 15 to 20 minutes and when we had moved into position. We wiped them out. There was only about a squad of them. And then the next one, as I recall, came from the left flank, where I thought there was a company over there, but as it turned out, G Company on the left flank had not gained their position. E Company on our right flank had not gained their position. And F Company was the only company to have reached the objective, which was the power line trail that runs across the top of Fonte Ridge. On the night of D plus 4, which would have been the 25th of July, the Japanese launched a series of night-long counterattacks. They had a plan, which is all recorded now, to drive wedges in us and work their way down to the beach, and so they'd end up on the beach and we'd end up on the hills, which would be a complete reversal of the way things started on D-Day. They were partially successful in that they did break through areas of the Marine lines that were not covered, and there was no contact because of the terrain, the steep cliffs and the heavy brush, where units could not actually make physical contact and had to try to cover the areas by mortar artillery fire. As far as F Company is concerned, again, now I just really know what happened in the immediate area of my platoon. But we were attacked, I think, about 7 times concentrated attacks by the Japanese infantry. And they were determined to push through us, and fortunately, despite the fact that we lost a lot of men and ran extremely low on ammunition, we were able to maintain our position at the height, even though we did have to pull back from the power line about maybe 50 to 100 yards, and set up a alternate line where it was a matter of holding because there was no place else for us to go except over the cliff. The fighting on Fonte lasted for another 3 days. However, my particular platoon had the worst of it the evening of the 25th, and we were down to about 8 men left in the platoon. So consequently, we were fortunate in that we weren't used in any additional assaults. These assaults were used against the Japanese remnants holding out in, for instance, the Depression for one, and then some caves around where the general was. And but within 3 days, it was pretty well all straightened out. And the final beachhead line from Adelup all the way down to Nimitz Beach was now in American hands, and the Japanese, as an effective fighting unit, had been destroyed. Well, about what I personally felt, I guess any Marine, or I should say any soldier, infantry troop, is always extremely optimistic about his own survival. Anything bad is always going to happen to the next guy or the next unit, and you never really think it's going to happen to you. So I came into Guam, of course, with a feeling of optimism, and the only time I had any, I guess, wavering of my optimism was the night of the 25th up on Fonte Hill. With a lack of ammo, our mortars had run out of mortar shells. We ourselves were extremely low, and it looked like the Japanese were coming in unending waves. They were able to concentrate many more people in that area than we would. I knew that our unit had been the division reserves, so there was nobody else to really come and help, and it was a matter of, you know, hanging in there and surviving. And that evening, or I should say early that morning, I was convinced that at least where I was, my small unit was due to be wiped out. And it did give me some feelings of anxiety, I guess, maybe even despair, but it didn't temper my resolve to continue to hang in there. I know I had a rosary that I used a lot. And fortunately, I guess the Japanese ran out of men before we ran out of ammo, and so I'm sitting here 42 years later talking about it. After the final beachhead line had been established, and the not only the Fonte area, but the whole area was completely solidified, then it was pretty obvious to everyone the Japanese were heading for the north end of the island to make one of their traditional last stands. Nobody really knew for sure how many Japanese were left or exactly where they were, so then it became a matter of pursuing them, and hopefully pursuing them fast enough so they wouldn't have an opportunity to set up a real strong final defensive line and have another, you know, horrendous battle like they had up on Saipan. So I was involved in running points up Marine Drive and patrols off into areas to pursue or to engage small units of Japanese. And at the time, I guess I knew where I was, but most of the time all I knew was what direction we were heading, because when you get up into the northern area, it became extremely thick. And of course it was, I guess it was a rainy season. It was pretty miserable, and it was almost but not quite as bad as the operations we had been through down on Bougainville and, you know, the real forest. Our unit ended up by Paddy Point on the 10th of August, and then the island was declared officially secured, although there were probably as many as 5,000 Japanese troops scattered all over the island. The 9th Regiment moved over to a camp between Elig and Tokcha Bay, and from there we ran patrols up into now what Bloomberg Hills area and Baza Gardens area, and also Talifofa. F Company of the 9th Marines was sent down to Inarahan at the time that the island sweep occurred, so we did not participate in that. And I don't really remember if the rest of 2nd Battalion 9th participated or not. But I know we were in Inarahan and we were running patrols out there, and that gave me an opportunity, of course, to meet the local people firsthand.
Was there anybody you got to know personally during that time?
Yeah, I met a couple people and I knew them personally, and I one was a extremely beautiful young Chamorro girl, and her name, as I recall, was Carmelita Duenas. I had a picture of her, but after I got married, my wife was going through my memoirs, and that picture disappears. So I don't know, you know, where whatever happened to her, where she went, or anything like that. But we spent maybe 6 weeks patrolling the hills around Inarahan, rooting out Japanese stragglers who, by that time, were getting into fire ants.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they were getting into pretty bad shape. They were scrounging for food, and their weapons were rusting up, so, but they would not surrender, so it was just a matter of going out and finding them and killing them and reporting back, getting your information on what had happened.
Was this strictly your battalion, or did you have anybody from the combat patrol, insular force guards,
well,
with you?
I know, I've met these guys, and they've told me about what they've done, but I don't recall ever operating with them. I don't, frankly, when I came back here to Guam and they told me about that, I was a little bit surprised because, unless my memory is completely gone, I'd never heard of the outfit. But of course, you have to remember that we were busy not only running our patrols, but we were also busy rebuilding our company. Our company had started out with about 245 or 46 men, and it went down to something like 68. So we got in, you know, a tremendous number of replacements. And so we were quite busy doing that, running patrols, training. And, of course, we got involved into tactical maneuvers out in the hills, re-again emphasizing the use of supporting weapons, which would be infantry working with tanks, infantry working with close air support, things of this nature. We also undertook a intensive program on the reduction of mutually supporting reinforced positions. We didn't know it at the time, but we were being geared up for Iwo Jima. So consequently, as I say, Guam Combat Control Patrol had been operating all around me, and I just probably never heard of it or never ran across them, that's all.
When did you leave the island? Do you remember what day you left the island? Did you go to Iwo Jima?
Yeah, we went to Iwo Jima, and I don't know what day we left. It's probably in the books, probably maybe the 15th or 16th of February, 1945. And, of course, that's a whole other story up there, which I'm sure you don't want to hear about.
Yes,
we're
I
talking
do.
About Guam. Oh, you want to hear about Iwo Jima?
Yes.
Oh, good grief. Well, we, 3rd Marine Division, was a reserve, a floating reserve for the 4th and 5th Marine Divisions. And the word was out, of course, that there were only, 12,000 or so Japanese on Iwo Jima, a very small place, and the 4th Division would wipe it out in anywhere from 5 to 10 days, and then the 3rd Marine Division would come in and pick up all the neat souvenirs and would garrison the island in preparation for the landings at Honshu. When we invaded Japan. Of course, it turned out 3rd Marine Division did operate on Iwo Jima. The 21st Regiment went in, I think, on D+2. They would have gone in on D+1, but I think the seas were too heavy. And then we came in on, I guess, D+4, and we replaced replace the 21st Marine Regiment, which was part of the 3rd Division. We replaced them at the edge of the 2nd Airfield, which was called Moriyama No. 2. The first day we attacked across the airfield, and we were fairly successful in getting across, although we did, we suffered pretty good casualties, and also the tanks operating with us. The tanks really took a terrible beating that day, and it was a very difficult situation. Of course, attacking across an airfield is not a great deal to hide behind. As I say, we made it across, and that evening or that afternoon, K Company again came. They went through our lines and continued the attack, and they ran into a concentrated artillery and mortar fire. K Company got pretty well badly shaken up, and then they withdrew back through our lines and all the way off to the end of the airfield. We continued the attack again the next day into what was a bunch of hills. There was no vegetation. It was black coral, or I should say black volcanic ash. And in these hills, they were honeycombed with caves and pillboxes, and we, of course, were exposed with no cover, no concealment. And again, we took a pretty good beating. As I recall, it was, I think it was either that day or maybe the next day, that I was wounded, and that was the end of the Iwo Jima campaign for me. I ended up right back here on Guam and laid around the hospital here for I don't know how long, a couple weeks, until they put together a evacuation ship, and I ended up in San Francisco. And from there I was transferred to the I forget what it is, plastic, or I don't know, whatever. I was transferred to a ward at Great Lakes Naval Hospital, and I was a patient there until June of 46. I spent a long time in that particular hospital. But I got to see a bunch of old comrades, because Great Lakes also became a separation center, and everybody was always looking up everybody else to find out, you know, how they'd made out, what happened, and, you know, if they were going back to civilian life, because the war had been over for almost a year by then. So that, I had some real, real interesting reunions down in Chicago.
How did World War II affect you personally? After you had came back from the campaigns and you went back to the mainland.
How did it affect me?
Yeah.
What do you mean, Rose?
What did you feel? How did you feel after being through war and going through war and then going back to home?
Well,
wherever home was.
Yeah. Well, of course, I was very sad about all the comrades who had not survived the war. Then again, on the other hand, I was very thankful that I did. I couldn't believe it, frankly, that I had survived it. Up on Iwo Jima, I was pretty well convinced that I wouldn't survive that. And then I knew if I did, there'd be another one down the road. And I figured, well, you know, the life of a platoon leader is, well, it's not something that anybody would insure. So I was very grateful to have survived World War II.
How do you feel about Japanese today?
I love the women.
do you feel any bitterness or any? What do you feel toward the Japanese today that you see today?
I don't really feel bitterness. I feel a little bit of animosity. I certainly wouldn't deny that. see, of course, you know, what's going on in the world and how Japan is right now. They're, what, number two in gross national product. Everything I own is Japanese, which it had a hard time convincing me back in the 40s that I would end up driving a Japanese car and wearing a Japanese watch and watching Japanese television set. And that's just a few of the items. This, I feel the Japanese are still waging war against us. And every time I get in the Honda and bump my head, I say, yep, they're getting even. Economically, they are doing an outstanding job. Here on Guam, of course, it's extremely obvious when you realize the extent of the property holdings and the hotels. And I see Japanese tourists come here. They buy all their tickets, their rooms and everything. They pay for those in Japan, so that money doesn't come to Guam. They come here on JAL Airlines. That money doesn't come to Guam. When they leave the airport, they get on a Hino bus that was made in Japan, driven by a Japanese driver and a little tour girl who's Japanese. They stay in a Japanese hotel, and they go to Japanese restaurants, so yeah.
Established to commemorate all people and all nations who participated in World War II. What would you like to see at the park? What would you like to see done at the park as far as development?
Well, I think what you and I discussed, Rose, I think the most valuable thing that could be done there, and I know there's not any money for it, is to establish a relief map showing the ASEAN Antelope area and the Agate area, and then plot in there the positions, the known positions of the Japanese, and also depict the landing beaches. I've seen these things in the States, and I forget what they're called, but they are animated with sound, lights, the whole works. In fact, I live right by one. It was called, was in West Chicago, called Cantigny, and it was really the highlight of the whole exhibit. Now, they had everything from the war in Europe there, but this is what really drew the crowd, because it, more graphically, like this tape, for instance, it's very hard, it'll be hard for anyone to get any rapport from this tape, but something like that, then they could truly visualize and understand, I don't want to use the word ridiculous, but how difficult it was to, you know, do what was done here in the Pacific, to have a bunch of young men's, you know, land in a place like this, which is you look at it now, it's a big saucer, and you look at those hills up there, and you wonder how in the world could they ever get up them. And then consider the fact that they were defended by a very determined and well-equipped enemy. And it was. All the people that were killed here, and you look at it now, here we are walking down the street arm in arm with the Japanese. So I guess maybe that's the story of all people who participated in battles. That you wonder, you know, why in the world was it necessary and where did it get us? We got back our land and we lost a hell of a lot of men. The Japanese, you know, for all intents and purposes, they won.
On behalf of the National Park Service, I thank you for your contribution to our oral history projects.
Oh, I appreciate it. I'm flattered that I could be a spokesman for a bunch of Marines that I knew quite well and who themselves, you know, can't be here for one reason or another.